Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So I was a little hesitant to come up with a title or a topic for this seminar, because I didn't really want to do an attempt to do a scholarly presentation on a particular topic. Rather, I wanted to do something that was more real, for me, something that had more to do with my own spiritual life. Something where you say, speak from scripture, but also speak from genuine experience. So I had some idea that this summer I would develop a seminar on the theme, The Monk and His Mantra, or showing the two sides, the individual, the role, the personality, the particular individual way that we are discovering our spiritual life. And I would give examples from my own life. And the other side, the mantra representing the process that we are all part of. And how these two come together. Like sometimes, in reflecting, in reflecting on my life, there's a good number of years in Krishna consciousness, and there's also a life before Krishna consciousness. And what shall I say? When in reflecting on my life, then sometimes I think, well, I didn't really learn anything from the scriptures. Right? Actually, everything I learned from life itself. And then the scriptures provided the purports. And it's like that. It's like life is like provided me with experiences that were intense and sometimes sweet, sometimes the opposite. And somehow or other, I became shaped by that. And then the scripture gave me the perspectives of how to actually deal with all that, all these lessons. Because 1,000 good instructions are falling on deaf ears in my case. And so many good injunctions in the scripture, but how much are we really able to make a change? So that is a question on my mind. I had a verse from the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 15, verse 17. Sada santusta manasa sarva shiva maya disha Sarkarakantakadibhyo yato panatpada shivam. For a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there is no danger, even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. For him, everything is auspicious. Similarly, for one who is always self-satisfied, there is no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere. So here we are speaking about the upanapadaha, or a person who has suitable shoes, the shoes of satisfaction. So I like that a lot, right? That one who wears the shoes of satisfaction doesn't feel the thorns and sharp stones on the path, or in other words, is not affected by all the austerities that we face in spiritual life. So that sounds encouraging to me. I'm interested in it. But the question is, how to get these shoes of satisfaction. Obviously, it cannot come from material satisfaction. That's obvious. Savai punsa parodano yatabatiya dokshate ahaitikiya patiyata yayatna supersedati. That only through pure devotional service will one be fully satisfied. Supersedati. And that's fine. But then again, pure devotional service, and there's also conditioned devotional service, and then Varnashram comes in. And when Varnashram comes in, then engagement according to one's nature comes in. Engagement, being situated properly. And that we see in the story of Gajendra. It's very interesting, as Srila Prabhupada was writing about Gajendra the elephant, who was very powerful. It was a very large, powerful male elephant, and attacked by a crocodile. And under ordinary circumstances, this elephant would have been able to defeat the crocodile. The crocodile would have not had a chance. But the crocodile attacked when the elephant was in the water. And when Gajendra was bathing in a beautiful lake at the Trikuta Mountains, then this creature, this horrible crocodile, attacked and bit him. And it became a huge fight. And it wasn't that all the time the crocodile was hanging on the leg of Gajendra. It wasn't like that. Sometimes he would let go and then again come back. But as he let go, in between he would eat some fish. Whereas, elephants eat grass and things alike. And so there was nothing, no food. So even the strongest person after some time, when there is no nourishment, becomes weak. So therefore, because there was no nourishment, Gajendra became weak. And although he started out strong, eventually he came to a point where he was defeated by the crocodile. And then Prabhupada, in his purports, is beginning to write about Varnashram. And he writes that one must be properly situated. It must be known that when Srila Prabhupada was writing these purports, that just at that time there was an extraordinary situation, that one of his leading sannyasis, and in those days leading sannyasis were very young men in their 20s, which is not easy to be a sannyasi in one's 20s. I don't recommend it unless one is very pure. Anyway, so one sannyasi had decided to send his danda back to Prabhupada, and he sent it in the mail. So this danda arrived in the mail. And as this danda arrived in the mail, and with it the news that this particular devotee was giving up the sannyas ashram, Prabhupada became very serious, and just then he was writing these purports. So one can see the event happening in the purports. It's right there. It was what was inspiring these purports, where Prabhupada is saying that if it becomes too difficult to maintain in one position, then one can change and find himself a position where one is more satisfied. And from that position one can more easily function. That is another point about satisfaction. So I spoke about Savai Pumzo Paro Dharmo, the satisfaction from pure devotional service. And that is the ultimate satisfaction. But when there's no ultimate satisfaction, there's also a need for a certain material condition of life that is satisfying. So the shoes of satisfaction. Everyone is looking for them. Everyone is looking for a position, a temple, a place to stay. Shall I go here? Shall I go there? Where shall I serve Krishna? Which place do you think is the best for my psychophysical nature? Oh, I don't know. See a psychologist. Maybe. Is it even important, psychophysical nature? I don't know. It's like, oh yeah, it's okay. When I came to Krishna consciousness, those were the days when there was only the deep end. You know, the swimming pool has the part where you can sort of walk, and then the little part for the toddlers where they can puddle around, and then the deep end. Well, in the Krishna conscious movement I joined, there was only the deep end, right? And the motto was sink or swim. Many sank, actually. But they were not real devotees. So that was easy. And those who survived, yes. Now those were the days. Well, all right. It was intense because I remember at 5:30 in the morning, I was called into the office of the temple president after a few days in the temple if I wanted to go on Sankhya what? Sankhya what? I wasn't sure, but he said, yeah, you like it, you get to travel. Okay, hurry up, pack your bag. And I did. And 5 minutes later, the car drove off, and I was in the car. My mind was like a rubber band, like, where are we going? Next moment, I found myself in a Dutch-German border town, because I happen to speak German, so they thought, perfect. And they sent me there, and I stood there, and in front of a big shopping place, and just out of nowhere, the mother of my girlfriend stands in front of me. And she wasn't supposed to. Wasn't part of the script. Because she didn't live in that city at all. So it was so unexpected. I was so shocked. And you know, I was shaved up and had a beanie and a funny nylon jacket which was yellow, black and yellow, and looked like a wasp. And so I felt my identity had just recently been destroyed, you know, with these clothes. My false ego had been seriously attacked, and I felt like I was an extraterrestrial at that point. That's to understand. So when suddenly she was there, it was such a shock that when she said, what are you doing here? I just said, excuse me, lady, I've never met you in my life. Which is terrible. It is a terrible thing to say. But worse than that is once you've said it, you can't go back. So I was stuck, you know, I had to go all the way back, right? So she was just saying, come on, I can't believe it, you don't want to know. I said, no, you're really mistaken me for someone. Anyway. So my first day on book distribution, I was mentally broken. Mentally broken. The second day was not much better. The second day, the new bhaktis, had the good fortune that early in the morning we could load the van in minus 15 which we did, and then as a reward we could sit on the boxes of books in the back, and there was a partition, and the brahmanas, they were sitting in the front, and there was the heating and also the 7-up and the cashews, and in the back it was minus 15 on the boxes, and we were like a little envious. Cashews and 7-up. Anyway, when we got to the spot, the devotees, they had stolen a shopping cart from a supermarket to move the books around, right? So someone said, can you please give the shopping cart? So I gave the shopping cart, and he pulled it out of my finger, and just then my finger got caught in the thing, and it hurt like hell, and it was really cold, so it hurts more. So it came out of the van, blowing on my finger. And this devotee goes, what's wrong? What's wrong? My finger got stuck. Prabhu, you're not the body. Well, that warmed me up. It helped. I felt a lot better at that stage, right? The cold didn't faze me so much. And then they sent me out with this new devotee. And this new devotee, he had only three words, Jai Nectar Bliss. Which, you know, at that moment, I was just not in the mood for that. I was really fried. And he goes, Jai Nectar Bliss. And I was just like, looking at him, and I was thinking, I was thinking of something mean I could say to him. So I saw he was not wearing gloves. So I said, you know, it's minus 15, and you're not wearing gloves, your hands are going to freeze. Then he said, Prabhu, I'm not the body. And I thought, my God, first a fanatic and now a lunatic. So I had some difficulties at that time to fully adjust to the situation within that sink or swim environment. Maybe I was sinking. Anyway, somehow or other, Krishna saved me. Because when I was in Maya and went to the movies after that, after that event, I thought, I need a little Maya. And I went to the movies. And then in the movies, suddenly, there's these Hare Krishnas. Sure, trying to be in Maya and movies, and then the Hare Krishnas come in the movie. But there was something wrong. The timak was wrong. There was no tulsi leaf on the nose. I said, what is this? These are not real Haris. These are fake. Right? And next moment, they walked into a bar. They sat at the bar and they ordered some drinks and some girls came and sat on the brahmachari's laps and a voice said, it's good to have a drink after a hard day's work. And I was so angry. I said, these rascals, how dare they? And went back to the temple. So, Krishna is merciful. And that is there. That is there. In spite of our struggles, in spite of the fact that we are not model devotees, in spite of the fact that there is a perfect process that is designed, but we are not perfect people, and it's not a perfect fit at all. Right? In spite of the wonderful process, how do I fit in this? I know it's the best. I know it's the greatest. But is it me? Can I do it? Narayani also said it yesterday, and I often also said the same, that, you know, when we have doubt, it's not that we're doubting, Prabhupada or Krishna consciousness. Most of the time it's not like that. I accept Krishna consciousness, this is true, but I doubt in myself. I doubt in myself. Of course, indirectly that's also a doubt in the process, because then we don't believe that the process is so powerful that it can change us. Then we think that the mountain of our karma is so big that nothing can be done about it. My karma is insurmountable, but Krishna has a thunderbolt on his lotus feet, and that thunderbolt is there to smash the mountain of our karma. So you can't say, oh, my karma is so bad, so bad. My, I have Rahu in K2, and I owe all the oh God, you know, in such a terrible place. Yes, and I'm just in my Rahu period for the next 19 years. I'm doomed. I'm doomed. There's nothing I can do. And the astrologer said it also. And you have no chance. No chance. No. Absolutely not. Best just go to bed and don't wake up. I know one brahmachari who stayed 32 hours in a sleeping bag. And I just wondered, is he waterproof? Anyone stay 32 hours in a sleeping bag? Inconceivable, isn't it? I think it went beyond sleeping. I think it really had another purpose. I think he was just trying. He was in denial. Oh yes, I think in denial of the world, and he chose for tamagun. But how long can you go for tamagun? So, one point, you wake up to reality again. So, okay, all these things are dealing a little bit with the reality of the sadhaka, the reality of the devotee who is trying in spiritual life to take up Krishna consciousness. And, yeah, it's not just all easy. So, for the last few years, I'm working on a book that is never finished. And it's still not finished. But I'll just read chapter 1 to you to sort of give you an idea of, not of the book, but of the goal. Since I kind of described now the perfect process and the person who's trying to fit in and try to wear supposedly the perfect shoe, right? The shoe, but it's not fitting. And it's like, you know, a new shoe, maybe beautiful, but it hurts the feet. Chapter 1, setting the scene. Krishna is the center. Krishna is the center here. The eternal residents of Vrindavan are leading the way. Their minds are always drawn to Krishna with intense eagerness, samudkanta. They desire to be always in his association. They see only him, either directly or indirectly, without wasting a moment. Even the most common things are not a casual experience for the gopis. Everything is touched with the same magic. O Mother Earth, what austerities did you perform to attain the touch of Lord Kesava's lotus feet, which has brought you such great joy that your bodily hairs are standing on end? You appear very beautiful in this condition. Was it during the Lord's current appearance that you acquired this ecstatic symptom? Or was it perhaps much earlier when he stepped upon you in his form of the dwarf Vamanadeva? Or even earlier when he embraced you in his form of the boar Varahadeva? Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto. The world appears like a mirror, and the gopis only see the reflection of Krishna everywhere in an unlimited variety. The entire land of Vrindavan and its residents share the same mood throughout. There is nothing in Vrindavan which is not meant for the pleasure of Krishna. Rupa Goswami describes it as premantaranga, absorbed in love for Krishna. And charming Krishna, the playful, mischievous coward boy, is not passively awaiting the worship of his unlimited devotees. When Krishna vibrates his flute, Vrajas, bulls and deer and cows, standing in groups at a distance, are all captivated by the sound. And they stop chewing the food in their mouth and cock their ears. Stunned, they appear as if they are asleep or like figures in a painting. When the cows hear Krishna's flute from a distance, they can hardly make out that sound and cannot distinguish the intricacies of Krishna's musical arrangements. But simply that faint sound is enough to capture their heart and completely agitate them. After a short time, when the cows, bulls, and deer hear the song of Krishna's flute more clearly, they feel fear that death might intervene and separate them from Krishna. So to prevent themselves from hearing any more, they lift their front legs and forcibly cover the holes of their ears. When that also fails to stop the sound, they come closer to Krishna, holding blades of grass in their mouth as a sign of humility. Cows with a blade of grass as a sign of humility. Begging him for mercy. And when that also fails to stop Krishna from playing, they all become stunned. Please throw a few drops of mercy my way. In this land, I'm a beggar, a sinful man of small mind, who has no possessions of any value whatsoever. Still, I'm very fortunate, because somehow or other I was brought here by the mercy of the Vaishnavas and by the endless kindness of my spiritual master. I'm not here on my own strength. I was brought here despite my lack of qualification. The residents of Vrindavan seem to tolerate my presence. They go about their own business, and I cannot follow all the things they're doing, but in catching glimpses of their transcendental activities, and sometimes they shower special mercy upon me by giving me something. I became fortunate because of my divine spiritual master, who doesn't care however degraded a person may be. He gave me the Maha Mantra to chant on Tulasi beads. Due to my laziness, I'm only making a half-hearted attempt to chant some mantras for Krishna's pleasure. I'm offering him only broken names. I tell myself that I'm trying to improve. Anyway, whatever may be, I won't give up, because I was told that even if one chants in such a way, that Krishna still accepts, and gradually the chanter will become purified, and the Vaishnavas surely will favor him. My residence is naturally a very simple dwelling, and it's meant to be some sort of bhajan kutir. At least, I'd like to call it that. It is situated on the banks of a river filled with mental energy. It has a swift current of the stream of my thoughts. There are also all kinds of treacherous whirlpools and undercurrents in the form of my thinking, feeling, and willing. And I am forced to bathe in that river. But I try not to enter too deep so that I will not be swept away by the fast-moving waters. There are very dangerous waterfalls in this river, and one who goes over the edge practically has no chance of survival. The falls of illicit sex, gambling, and intoxication. And there are many other dangers, such as the sharp rocks of Vaishnav Aparat. The current of this river is too strong even for an experienced swimmer, so one has to be very careful to keep himself at a safe distance from the danger zone and not go too far away from the shore of Sadhana Bhakti. There, on this river, stands my simple cottage, made of Sravanam, hearing, Kirtanam, chanting, and Smaranam, remembering. Of course, there are plenty of cracks in the walls and in the roof, and mundane influences are leaking through the six enemies that attack again and again and hold the conditioned soul in its iron grip: lust, kama, greed, loba, anger, krodha, illusion, moha, madness, mada, and envy, matsarya. We're trying to be on guard so that we may not be overcome by them. However, the most important means of defeating these mundane influences is by devotional service. Kichit kevalai bhakta vasudev parayana agamdumanti karsneya niharam iva bhaskara. Only by being fully absorbed in service to Vasudev can the influence of sinful activities be overcome, as fog disappears by the rays of the sun. The chapter goes a little further. So this first description here describes a little bit our situation, that by the mercy of the parampara, we are being presented with the spiritual world. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nama Mahavadanyaya, Krishna Prem Padayate, Krishna Krishna Chaitanya, Namni Guru Trishnama, is giving us the reality of the spiritual world. We, of course, are totally unable to grasp such a reality. There's no question. But somehow or other, he gives it very freely to those who are totally unqualified. So here I describe that we are in Vrindavan, in that situation in the spiritual world, by the mercy of our spiritual master. We are already present. We are already present to an extent. We are already perceiving the eternal spiritual world to an extent. We are already hearing about the mood and the pastimes of the spiritual world to an extent. But we cannot really follow the residence, the eternal residence of the spiritual world. But we're catching some glimpses, some little bits here and there that we pick up, that are given to us, and something sinks in little by little. And these kind of realizations, these kind of things gradually begin to fill our heart a little bit with some inspiration in Krishna consciousness. Once I was staying in a particular town which has a path along a river, and I used to take walks along that river during the day. So one night I was dreaming, and suddenly I was even at some distance from the river, on a road that was leading up to the path next to the river. I wasn't yet so close to the river. And then suddenly I see in this river a huge green snake, which totally, this was a European river. What is a huge green snake doing in a European river? So that was totally out of place. An enormous type of boa constrictor snake swimming in the water. So I'm just looking at, like, wow, look at that. And there are some ducks swimming in the river, and he swallows them just like that. You go, whoa, this snake means business. And next moment, the snake suddenly crawls on the shore, so I turn around and go, okay, time to go. And just as I'm about to go, I just went up straight in the air. I flew up in the air. And then made a landing again. Then I woke up. So what a dream. What do you do with a dream like that? So at first, didn't quite know what to do with it. But later it started to dawn upon me that the snake was representing lust. And this all-devouring, sinful enemy, lust, that was swimming on that river and devouring various living entities that are swimming on the ocean, on the river of sense enjoyment. One duck, other duck. And then, when that snake came in my direction, I flew up into the air. And then I was thinking, what did that mean, you know? What did that mean? I was thinking, yes, I was too light. I was trying to remember, and I remembered suddenly that as I was flying up, I sort of was thinking, I am too light. I'm too light. Most people don't have that problem in this modern world, but, you know, I was too light, and I just... people crack the earth wherever they walk, right? But I flew up in the air because I was too light. And then something came into my consciousness. Some remembrance, some faint memory appeared lagu, lagu, too light. Yes, lagu. When the bhakta is lagu, when he is too light, when he is too light, when there is not enough weight in his bhajan, in his worship, when he has not sufficiently become absorbed, when a devotee has not sufficiently become absorbed, then a devotee becomes lagu, becomes light, too light. That's just the opposite of guru. The word guru, as we may know, the etymological meaning of the word guru is heavy.
Yes, guru, this is heavy.
No, not that kind of heavy, although maybe sometimes also. But heavy, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that the word guru means heavy because guru is always fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna and nothing can move him. Nothing can move him from that. But that heaviness comes from his worship, from his service, from his devotional service. The bhaj dhatu, lagu bhakti, bhakti that is too light, bhakti that is too light, or that is bhakta abhas. Bhakta abhas is sometimes translated as the dim reflection of a devotee. Right? Nam abhas, dim reflection of the holy name, is also bhakta abhas, the dim reflection of a devotee. If you want to say something to someone, you bhakta abhas, you dim reflection of a devotee. It sounds like something like that, isn't it? But yes, a dim reflection of a devotee, a faint reflection of a devotee. So only beginning. Yes, when the absorption is not there, one becomes lagu. That is lagu. So absorption must be there. That is what gives us the spiritual weight. Bhaj dhatu, which is the root of the word bhakti or bhajan, is difficult to translate into English. It is said there is an element of worship, there is an element of service, there is an element of love, all in that one word. It cannot be translated with one word, bhakti. Srila Prabhupada, of course, translates bhakti with devotional service and explained that love is involved. When Srila Prabhupada arrived in Los Angeles, then so many devotees had assembled on the airport. And they were all in hippie gear and all ready to meet him. And greatly, and everyone was crying tears. It was the second time Prabhupada came. He came back after a break in India. And everyone was crying tears. And Shruti Kirti was there, Prabhupada's personal servant. And his eyes were dry. And he said, oh, later that day he was massaging Prabhupada. And during the massage, he said, oh, Prabhupada, all these devotees have so much love for you. Like, but not me. I have no love at all. Just not a tear. My eyes were dry. Everyone was crying, but I didn't have a tear. I had no love. Prabhupada didn't say anything. Sukirti continued massaging. But the next day, during the massage, at the same time, at the very same time, Prabhupada said, this is also love. This is also love. This massage. This is also love. So yes, there is a beginning, a seed of love at least. It's done voluntarily. There's a seed. I like it that we find In the Bhagavatam, we find the definition of the Madhyam Adhikari and the intermediate devotee, and also the definition of Kanista and Uttam. The definition of the Madhyam Adhikari I like because it is saying Ishvara tat adinesu bali sesu dvisat sucha prema maiti kripupeksi yakaruti samadhyama. So it's a, for Ishvara, the Madhyam Adhikari has prema. Yeah, I find that interesting. Ishvara tat adinesu. For the devotees, then there is friendship. For the ignorance, mercy, and the non-devotees. For the envious, then it's like indifferent, apeksha. But the Madhyama Adhikari already has love. Although generally speaking, you know, Krishna prem, you know, must be completely free from any shortcomings, isn't it? Sometimes people say that is your guru a parama prista priya sakhi? I don't know. Well, how do you think he can give you Krishna prem if he is not a parama prista priya sakhi? Oh my God, is my guru a parama prista priya sakhi? Never thought of that. What to do now? Don't worry, because this movement is under the control of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is coming down to the disciplic succession. So we're getting that mercy. It is through that mercy that everything will come to us in due course of time. But you see, and then some people point out, yes, it is very difficult to go back to Godhead. In the year 1999, I did a seminar, and the seminar was called from 66, from 66 to 99. Okay, you see the fingers from 66 to 99, right? And in 66, it was a glory story. In 66. We saw everywhere success. Just look at early Back to Godheads, right, in the years following 66, success. Another temple opened, and this is our newly opened temple in, and this is our newly opened temple in, and this is our newly opened temple in the next country, success. And it was very Prabhupada-centered. I remember one article in an early Back to Godhead where all the devotees are waiting for Prabhupada to come down, and Prabhupada is upstairs in his quarters, and they have kirtan, and then still Prabhupada's not coming down. And Prabhupada is still not coming down, the kirtan's going on. So then finally they decide, okay, let someone speak something. And they ask the only sannyasi, Kirtanananda, to speak something. So Kirtanananda then starts, I'm not qualified to speak, but I'm speaking because I'm asked to speak. Usually then I get a long lecture. Anyway, he said, you know, where were we 1 year ago? Where were many of us even 6 months ago? Even 3 months ago? And said, but now, here we are, all with effulgent faces. And I looked, at the picture of the devotee of all the devotees in that same magazine, and they really had such effulgent faces, you know. And said, "Yes, where were we 6 months ago, 3 months ago?" Where would we have been without the mercy of a pure devotee? And that was the magazine, The Pure Devotee. The whole magazine was about the pure devotee. And the mood was completely upbeat. And it was, we're all going to go back to Godhead this lifetime. And then later it changed. By 99, it had come to, if your guru is not your Paramahansa Priya Shakti, how can he give you Krishna Prem? Then how can you go back to Godhead? Of course, then you have some sort of idea. Here is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is the most merciful incarnation. He is freely distributing the mercy to all. But only very few get initiated by a Paramahansa Priya Shakti Guru, and only they can go back to Godhead. Isn't it like? So, those who want to live with that vision of Krishna consciousness, I wish them well. I have nothing to say. I wish them well. And just as Kali was given a place to live by Maharaj Pariksit, a place where gold and what was it again? Where wealth was stored. Yes, I think, those kind of people, we give them the internet. They gotta live somewhere. And they can sit the whole day behind a computer and put all kinds of things. And we don't have time for these things anyway. So, wish them well. Anyway, so the mercy element is there, and the mercy element is very important, and that mercy is alive, and full success can be attained now as much as when Srila Prabhupada was here. Nothing has changed. The very same mercy that Prabhupada brought then is there now. And in fact, in some ways we even have it easier, because now we have so much more experience. Now we have so many more books, and then almost nothing. It's like Prabhupada brought his early Bhagavatams from India. Prabhupada was lecturing from a Bhagavad Gita of Dr. Radha Krishnan, a Mayavadi scholar. He's a scholar. Or a commentator. Don't help me too much, because then my mind goes on the clouds. It does have a weak mind. Very light. Anyway, now we have so much experience. Actually, now we have lost maybe that youthful enthusiasm that was there in the early 60s. But now we also have a lot of experience of what to do. And now we understand that the need for nourishment, for spiritual nourishment, is very important. So as I began my talk, because how much can you cover in one lecture? Not so much. As I began my talk about a verse from the seventh canto describing the shoes of satisfaction, that when we are satisfied, and then we analyzed a little bit that
if we are lacking in spiritual satisfaction, and then we need a certain amount of material satisfaction to sort of provide us a good basis. Just like in a circus. In a circus, you see a man walking on the tightrope, high in the tent on a tightrope. I sometimes, in my mind, think of the sannyasis in that way, and thinking that's why they carry the stick, actually. So when they walk on the tightrope to keep the balance, they carry a stick and just walk across that tightrope, keeping the balance. But in most cases, just before the ground, there is a net, you know. Yeah. And just in case, you know, he goes down, he drops in the net. And so the tightrope is the transcendental platform, the platform of being absorbed in devotional service. Itam sa staya paratmanistam majasitam purvatmanihi. The sannyasi is absorbed in serving Mukunda, serving Krishna. And in that way he can cross the ocean of nescience. So he's absorbed in transcendence, not by saying no, not just by constantly saying no to all material attraction. No, 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 I'm not doing it. No, no, no. Because then one has done the danda becomes a punishment. Then one lives a life of just nothing is allowed in the sannyasa ashram. Sense enjoyment is not really allowed. There's no the basic approach is no sense enjoyment. Only what comes natural in devotional service, and that so the real platform is absorption. Absorption in worshipping Krishna. Absorption in glorifying Krishna. It is simple. And then one becomes filled. Then the vacuum, the heart, is of the conditioned soul, is empty. And there's nothing in this world that can fill that emptiness. Only Krishna. Only Krishna can fill that emptiness. So when the heart is full, yes, then that is sannyas, actually. I somehow or other received sannyas in the Bhaktivedanta manner, and then afterwards I took a boat. It was summer, or May it was. In that year it was nice. And I went by boat across the North Sea on the way to France. And on the deck of the ship, I sat there with my newly received danda, and I chanted the verse, Apuryamanam Achala Patistam Abhasamudra Pravisantiyatva Tadvat Kamaya Pravisantiyatva Akama Kami Sasantiyatva. The verse is saying that just as so many rivers are flowing into the ocean, but due to its fullness, the ocean is never overflowing and not affected by all this water. In the same way, when the heart is full of devotion to Krishna, then all material desires cannot enter. So I was chanting that verse and meditating like that. That's my kind of sannyas meditation. And then I came to France, and then the first thing the custom officer said that my passport was false, and the second thing they did was confiscating my danda. Krishna was really giving me some mercy there. That was fun. Anyway, I got that danda back. It was a big fight, though. Yes. So there's apuryamanamachala pratistam, that the heart is filled with glorification of Krishna. Worship of Krishna means to make offerings to Krishna because he's such a wonderful person. And the more we bring this worship then back into public, then it becomes glorification of Krishna. So glorification is just it's public worship of Krishna. Even privately, we are worshiping Krishna, glorifying Krishna. So in this way, we will fill this heart. In this way, we become absorbed. So I was on the tightrope of transcendence, and then below there was the net. So the net of the mode of goodness, the net of Vaina Ashram, the net of certain prescribed codes, the net of sadhana bhakti, the net of pancharatrika behavior, of like one must bow down in the temple, the net of sadhachar, one must bow down to the Vaishnavas. That net of prescribed duties and prescribed activities. And if that net's not there, yeah, then one will only fall to the ground, like that. And of course, it's not only sannyasis who will fall, anybody, any devotee. When we are too light, then our material ideas take us away. We're too light, get blown away. And then, we may crash to the ground. So, in this way, and within, it is said that the mode of ignorance leads to madness, to illusion, and suffering. So it's the mode of passion, which is so, it is aiming for enjoyment, is leading to distress. And the mode of goodness is leading to satisfaction in the material world. So there is a level of satisfaction. In the Bhagavad Gita, about satisfaction, well, we find in the Bhagavad Gita the austerities of the mind, the austerities of speech, and the austerities of the body. And amongst the austerities of the mind, there is an interesting one, which says, to be satisfied. Since when is it an austerity to be satisfied? The austerity to be satisfied, obviously that sentence means to be satisfied when everything is right. When we are situated properly, when all the conditions are just as they're supposed to be, we're still not satisfied. Because we're never satisfied. Even when we are in a place which is filled with transcendental mercy. And even when we are in the association of wonderful Vaishnavas, hearing transcendental things and so on. Never satisfied. Never. Never ever satisfied. That is, therefore, then the austerity comes in. Austerity of the mind. To just say, yeah, but now I just must be satisfied. It's like that in life. And how much money do you want? You know, at one point you have to say, now it's enough. Yeah. And you know it. Even if you have billions, still never satisfied. So, but when we serve Krishna and worship Krishna, then we become more and more satisfied. But then we must do it. And that is why we have these opportunities of festivals like this, where there is a concentrated dose of absorption in especially hearing and chanting. That's what we do the whole day. Now, Artivai Bhav Maharaj will soon start up some kirtan again, and then in the evening we will swing the deities, and then we'll have more kirtan, and in this way the day goes on, a day of seminars, and all right, in between the body needs something, in between some R&R, some rest and recreation. But at the end of the day, what have we done? Right? If we, like if we take a Nisringa Chaturdasi and we just sit through the whole thing, and or we work for hours in the kitchen helping, or preparing the Abhishek, or cleaning things, and we really like go to the limit, right, on that particular day, then we have gained depth. This is called Naimitika Kriya. In devotional service, there are two aspects. One is Nitya Kriya, one is Naimitika Kriya. Nitya Kriya means the spiritual activity that we perform every day. And Naimitika Kriya is the exceptional activity that we perform on special occasions, on the Madhava Titi and so on, on these special days. Madhava Titi Bhakti Janami, especially from observing these special days, bhakti is born, because it is on these special days that we are increasing our absorption. And then that gives us some idea, hey, I should do this again, and I can keep some of this. If you decide for Nisringa Chaturdasi to read a whole chapter of the Bhagavatam, let's say the prayers of Prahlad, it's a big chapter. But if you say you do that, well, then that stays with you. If you do that every Nisringa Chaturdasi from now in the next 10 years, then you'll get some weight. You'll get some weight. You get absorption. You go deep into that knowledge. You'll begin to deeply penetrate, not just hear it, but some things, some points we begin to notice, some verses we begin to like. Like I like that particular verse, which is the 11th verse in that 9th chapter of the 7th canto, where it is described that when you decorate your face, that then also the face showing in the mirror will be decorated. And in that way, that by serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that we will be the one who get the benefit, and also the heart changes. That verse, I think, is is an outstanding verse. Of course, the whole chapter is outstanding, full of outstanding verses. But still, for me, at this point in my spiritual life, that verse speaks to me. It speaks to me. It inspires me to think, yes, let me decorate Krishna privately. Let me decorate him publicly. Let me glorify him, let me somehow or other put Krishna in the front. And the more I do so, surely the more my heart will be decorated with inspiration and filled with satisfaction and eagerness. Eagerness. When Prahlad came before Lord Nisringadev, and he was pushed forward by Lord Brahma, then Prahlad offered his obeisances, fell flat on the ground, and Nisringadev immediately became ecstatic. So it's nice that Srinadeva is getting ecstatic. You know, not just the devotee became ecstatic. No, the Lord became ecstatic. I mean, I like that. I noted it. You know, it's like sort of when I saw, hey, that's nice. The Lord is getting ecstatic. Yeah, he's getting ecstatic. And then he lifted him up. And immediately he was so satisfied too that he placed his hands in great affection on Balad Maharaj's head. Greatly blessed him also. So how nice that the Lord also becomes ecstatic. So maybe somehow or other awaken the ecstasy of the Lord. And this is what we should think of.
In my
little, in my book, of which I gave you a small sample, then the next point would be a metaphor. And that metaphor is a metaphor about a step. Yeah, taking a step forward, and I'll demonstrate the step, since that's more dramatic. Oh God, it's also convenient to stretch. So when we step forward, you can see, of course, in a long you don't see so much, but the weight is on one leg right now. The foot is going forward, and the weight is still on the first leg. This is the material leg. Then, slowly, we're putting our foot forward and put some weight on the spiritual leg. But most of the weight is still on the material leg. And we're practicing our spiritual life, and we struggle with material desires, and with the mind, and with doubts, and distractions, and this, and so many important things to do. But when we get more absorbed in service, in sadhana, and in worship, and in glorification of Krishna, gradually the weight shifts to the spiritual leg. And until all the weight is on the spiritual leg, and then we are still in the material body, and we still take care of it, but it's not affecting our consciousness. It doesn't absorb us at all. All the weight is on the spiritual leg. And it's this transformation that has to take place, where the weight has to go from the material leg towards the spiritual leg. And there will be the breakthrough in our devotional service. As long as the weight is on the material leg, we will be struggling in our spiritual life. How can I ever do this? Thank you very much. Now we have a few minutes left for questions and comments.
Not a very important question, but you mentioned related to the boar snake that you found yourself lifted up in the sky and then you dropped down again. What happened?
Because I woke up at that stage. When we become too light, we become swept away by the slightest little wind, by the slightest little external force. We become distracted by the pushings of the senses, and these senses will drag us along, and will lead to a fall down. So fall down can of course happen on all kinds of level. There can be an ultimate, a very gross fall down, but fall down can also be a little more subtle, just like there's a definition of illicit sex, and there are 8 types of illicit sex described, and it starts with smaranam keli preksanam guyam, smari keli preksanam guyam asanam advayam, and then forgot. Remembering or meditating, keli, joking, playing, all different kinds of illicit sex. So in a playful way, flirting, prexanam, looking, guyam asanam, sitting in a secluded place. Then there is contemplation of the act. Then there is making arrangements to engage in illicit sex, manipulating circumstances, and so on, bringing it to that point. I'm looking at the man just to be on the safe side. And finally, then there is the act itself. So it shows how when one is too light, that one can easily fall prey to these more subtle aspects of illicit sex. Yeah. And that's the root where one finally comes to the point of fall down. Yeah. So all these other things are maybe not so important, you know, that we are... If anybody ever thinks of illicit sex, or if anybody ever looks at a member of the opposite sex and or jokes, that we immediately walk in there and say, illicit sex, arrested. But it is the root cause of it, and its different progression is there. One thing, jayato visya pumsam, by meditation gradually becomes to attachment and the activity. So that's what happened when it became too light, that kind of distraction. Maharaj.
What's your in your opinion, what's the most essential cause of fall down? We always hear that there's so many different causes, but what's the most important, most essential cause?
Well, there are to narrow it down to one, I find a little difficult. There's a few major causes. One is offense, clearly. When we begin to make offenses, because even if the offenses are not so serious, but if the offenses are very serious, they just destroy our devotional creeper. If the offenses are of a more minor nature, they will destroy our taste, and they'll turn our spiritual life into a burden. So offenses in spiritual life are the major problem, absolutely. That is why at the time of initiation we emphasize it so much. We don't speak a lot about material desires and how to dovetail material desires, although everybody is full of material desires. But we speak about offenses because, you know, devotees always come and say, can I speak to you? Yes. Oh, I have a problem. Okay. And when usually it's a material desire. But actually, a material desire is not so much our problem. Our real problem is that we make offenses. When we make offenses, the material desires will be overcome easily. They're not overcome because we're making offenses. So this element of making offenses to devotees, holy name, and so on, is a big problem. And the other element is to be neglectful, due to material attachment, we are neglectful and we're not seriously applying ourselves to the process. Just like just before you came in, I was saying, like, I gave a description of a Vrindavan situation, the spiritual world where we were placed by the mercy of our spiritual master. We were not able to fully partake. And I was given the holy name,
and with that holy name everything can be attained. But I'm only chanting broken names. I'm a miser. I want Krishna praying, but I don't want to pay the price for it. I don't want to pay any price for it at all. I want it for free. Can I get it for free? You have to chant 16 rounds. Can I chant 12 rounds? 12 is so many. Can I chant 8? Can I chant 4? Can I chant 3? Can I not chant? Why do I have to chant anymore? Can I get it without chanting? It's so difficult to chant. Do I have to do anything? Why can't I get it totally for free? So then, okay, I'll chant some symbolic broken names. No seriousness at all. So neglect is obviously also a factor where the absorption doesn't take place, and then the vacuum in the heart remains. How then can we expect to become happy? Because, Maharaj, I think if we're not happy as devotees, how can we last? You know, sooner or later we have to be happy. You can put up a big show of this or that, you know. But with time, if you're not happy, it's not going to last. And that's the challenge. We have to be happy. Simple. Very simple, but very necessary. I have used up my time. This time belongs to the kirtan. So, next time, see you, Prabhupada. Ki jai.